I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Healthy Mind Matters, where we discuss the important community issues of stronger mental health, emotional wellness, and the growing problem of addiction. Healthy Mind Matters is brought to you by Intermountain Healthcare and Select Health. Here's our host, Maria Chaleos, on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And thank you for joining us for Healthy Mind Matters. Today we are talking about death by suicide and research being done by the medical examiner's office after a person dies, going beyond the toxicology exams. With me is Michael Staley. He's a suicide prevention research coordinator at the Utah Office of the Medical Examiner. And you can't say that quickly, Michael, or it just doesn't come out right.
No.
But we've been talking about the conversations that you have with families. And I think it's appropriate here to talk about the extent of what we're seeing in Utah. So let's talk about, first of all, when we started the conversation, you talked about more men or more males than females commit suicide. But kind of give us a breakdown of what our state looks like when it comes to suicide.
Sure. The whole Rocky Mountain West looks similar. And so I think context is really important. It's pretty common that you can just Google suicide in Utah and you'll find headlines that are quite alarming, you know, that we are the fifth in the nation, sixth in the nation. And I'm not a huge fan of those rankings because places like Montana have very small populations and it's difficult to compare places like Utah that have bigger populations to smaller populations. But in terms of what it looks a lot like the rest of the country. If you look at suicide trends in New Hampshire or Georgia or California, and that means that middle-aged white and Native men are really overrepresented in suicide death data, meaning that they're the highest risk population. And we focus a lot on youth, 10 to 17-year-olds, or even 10 to 24-year-olds. And I'm not in the business of comparing tragedies. I don't, you know, won't compare the death of a spouse to the death of a sibling to the death of a child. Obviously, those are very all high impact events. But if you look at who dies by suicide in our state, roughly 6% of all suicide deaths are 10 to 17-year-olds. If you move that age category to 25 to 45, especially among men, that represents the vast majority of the people who are dying by suicide. But again, I'll emphasize that has to be taken in context. That's true of Colorado, Nevada, Montana, and really everywhere else in the country as well. When you think about the impact of suicide, it's not just about the people who die. It's about the people who survive those deaths. The research tells us right now that about 135 people are impacted for every one suicide death on average. And so if you look at suicide death in Utah from 1999 to the present, and, you know, that's very arbitrary to say that, because the people who lost somebody to suicide in 1997, many of those people are impacted today just like they were then.
Sure.
But if we just take that as an example and we take 135 people for every suicide death, that means at least a third, probably even closer to half of our population in our state have been impacted by somebody, by a death to suicide. And that is tremendous.
That's a pretty remarkable number to think that many people have been touched in some way by someone who has died by suicide.
Absolutely.
One of the things that you said, 10-year-old, I mean, you're saying 10 to 24, but it is so difficult for me to imagine a 10-year-old committing suicide. Now, you said that's only 6%, and that's they're grouped in that age category. But to me, that is just that's an astounding age for someone to take their own life.
Yeah, I agree. And those deaths are very few and far between, thank goodness.
Certainly.
That's not a frequent event. By the way, suicide death as a whole, despite the fact that it is a huge problem, and again, this is not about speaking to the tragedy, it's mm-hmm. speaking to the numerical aspect of it. If you look at suicide compared to many other illnesses and mental illnesses, suicide is still a rare event in the United States, numerically speaking. Again, it is a highly impactful event. But when you talk about those younger deaths, there is some research that's nationwide that's saying that there's a rise in those younger years. And here in Utah, certainly those do happen, but they're very, very infrequent. And the numbers are so small, in fact, that it's really hard to decipher if they're going up like they are in the rest of the nation or if they're not.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about suicide in the last year or so, a couple of years. Are our numbers still going up, or are we starting to level off, or what does it look like at this point? I think one person committing or dying by suicide is terrible. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, one is absolutely. The goal is zero suicide.
Right.
Yeah.
But are those numbers still going up?
Not as much as we saw in the first part of the 2010s. 2008 to 2015, 16, that's where you saw those tremendous increases in suicide death. Since 2016, the numbers have remained high, but it doesn't appear on the whole that from 2016 to the present that those numbers are continuing to increase at the same rate. They've actually leveled off quite a lot. One of the thing, the rate actually may be going down. It's still too early to really put our eggs in that basket, and we don't want to say it's going down and then divest resources from this issue, because still the numbers are still very high and too high. But to say that they're still increasing at the same way that they were is also no longer accurate.
Are we getting better at the conversation? I almost said committed suicide, so I'm just going to put it out there instead of died by suicide. Are we getting better at being more sensitive and talking about this in a way that is more helpful than hurtful?
I think so. I don't think that goes to every single person. These are generalizations, but I think so. And here's how I measure that in a very unscientific way. I look at obituaries and I read so-and-so lost their life after a long battle with depression, or they'll just come out and say that so-and-so died by suicide on X, Y, and Z date. And that is happening with far more frequency than it happened in the past. And that's really just taking that stigma, looking it in the eye and throwing it down. And we're also having a much broader reach than we had before. Just at the end of August, we had our second annual Faith Leaders Summit, which you also had a program about. And we never had that before. And now we're empowering faith leaders to talk to their congregations about suicide prevention, empowering youth leaders and adult Sunday school education leaders to know the signs of suicides. And how powerful is that? We're educating physicians now to have conversations about suicide and restricting access to lethal means. How impactful is that? I think we're reaching into more domains of society than we ever have before, and all of these things are reducing the stigma about talking about suicide.
Are we also reducing the judgment that goes along? You mentioned the numbers. The research is very clear on if you've been impacted by suicide, you're more likely to commit to die by suicide.
It's very hard,
see, it's so hard that when that has been so ingrained in your conversation for so many years to change that. But the judgment, are we getting better about being so harsh in our judgment and criticism of others?
I think so. And I hear that when I talk to families sometimes. I don't want to say that the judgment isn't there, because it is. People after a suicide death, the people who survive that death, are still feeling like they're isolated, that they're alone, that because their loved one died by suicide, they can't talk about it openly. They're nervous about that. But it used to be the feeling even, you know, when I was in high school, that if you talked about suicide, that you would somehow plant an idea. And that is changing. I really do feel like the tide on that is changing and that people are feeling more comfortable asking the question, hey, are you okay? Do you want to harm yourself? Do you have any plans to die by suicide? These are really important and difficult conversations. I live and breathe this work every day. And if I have to ask those questions, and I do every time I do an interview, my hands still get a little bit sweaty. And again, I do probably ask that question as much as a clinician asks that question.
It's so personal for each person that you talk to, though.
Sure.
So it's like the first time every time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what we have to do now is reduce the stigma about what happens after that question is asked. So that when we ask, are you suicidal? If you tell me yes, will you lose your job? If you're in the military, will you not be deployed? Which is a huge stigmatizing experience for you to not be deployed with your company. And of course, these decisions are really complicated as well about what to do after that. But will you instantly be hospitalized? Are the lights and sirens going to show up in front of your house or in front of a clinic? We're getting a lot better about what happens after that question. We still have so far to go. But I look at where we were even 15 years ago to now, and wow, we've come a long way.
Let's take a break. You're listening to Healthy Mind Matters on KSL News Radio.